What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wrestler Court, Keenan and Turtle. Wrestler Court, Keenan and Turtle. Wrestler Court, Keenan and Turtle, yeah.
Keenan and Turtle in the Wrestler Court. One's a fan, the other used to ref the sport. One will speak and then the other will retort. Things could get heated, someone could get hurt at
Wrestler Court, Keenan and Turtle. Wrestler Court, Keenan and Turtle. Wrestler Court, Keenan and Turtle, yeah.
Judge, lawyer, bailiff, jury, strong opinions, rage and fury. Okay, it's time to argue wrestling.
Wrestler Court,
Court is in session.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Wrestler Court Podcast with Keenan and Turtle. I'm Keenan, obviously.
And I'm Turtle.
We have a huge show for you today, but don't forget, please rate, review, and subscribe over there on iTunes. You can also catch us on CBSPhilly.com as well.
And the Radio.com app.
The Radio.com app. Did you know the Radio.com app can stream anywhere in the world?
It's new and improved. It's fantastic.
Wherever you are, you hit Radio.com. You can get Keenan and Turtle.
Ooh.
If you're on a cruise.
Like I will be soon.
If you're
Keenan
on an airplane. If you're on the road, anywhere, you can get the Keenan and
That's
Turtle
That's a lot
podcast.
Of Keenan and Turtle.
It really is. But you can get that podcast anywhere. This very one right here.
And we have a great show coming up today, don't we?
We have a fantastic show coming up today. Huge guest. Big guest today.
Besides me?
Well, you're not really that big of a guest. Well, you're a co-host.
I'm kind of a big deal. I'm just saying.
Oh, God.
But who's the guest? Tell me.
We have the great, legendary WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross coming on to talk with us today about his new book, Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling, which is available, Turtle, on Amazon.com and wherever books are sold.
I'm thrilled. I love this guy. I've loved him from the start in wrestling. He is one of the icons of the sport. I cannot wait to talk to him.
Without a doubt, he's definitely the voice of the WWE. But before we get to Jim Ross, he's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. I got to touch on a couple points here. Did you happen to see Monday Night Raw this week?
Of course. What else am I doing Monday nights?
The Miz versus Roman Reigns. This bothered me for a lot of reasons. This match was really, really good. The crowd was into both guys. Roman was finally getting over. I mean, they were cheering Roman. Pot's legal in Denver, right?
That's insane. And listen, I've had enough of Roman Reigns. But what I'll give you is he's a very, very good in-ring performer. Everything else, he stinks. But with this whole feud,
wow,
with this whole story, with this storyline, listen, I'm going to tell you he stinks, and that's fine. With this storyline, it's beginning to come out of his shell. He started with the John Cena storyline. He's begun to come out of his shell on the mic. And this storyline, too, with The Miz and The Miztourage and all that kind of stuff, it's breaking him out of that shell. He's becoming the guy, as he likes
to
say.
Well, it's been a one-year story arc, you know, so to speak. It started with The Undertaker, then we went to John Cena, now he's moving on to Roman Reigns. To The Miz.
But just real quick, think about that storyline. One of the best of all time, another one of the best of all time, and The Miz, who, listen, he's not one of the best of all time, but for 100% sure, he's a WWE Hall of Famer.
And we've talked about this off air. You feel that this is going to go to Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar this year at WrestleMania in New Orleans.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I dislike about WWE. It's so easy to kind of telegraph what they're thinking a lot of the time. Listen, they surprise you every now and then, and that's great. But where else is this going? Because there's no way that Finn Balor coming up is going to beat Brock, which is going to start feuding soon. That's kind of he hinted at the other day. It's got to be him. It's got to be. And I really don't enjoy when I just know what's going to happen. But I'm enjoying the ride so far. I'm enjoying the Miztourage storyline right here with him.
Your feelings on Roman Reigns notwithstanding, let's circle back to Denver here. This match had fantastic storytelling. There
Absolutely.
Was a heel. There was a babyface. They were booing the heel. They were cheering the babyface, rather. It was classic old-school wrestling 101. The Denver crowd was into it. And what made this match for me so good was the false finishes. The false finishes made me believe. And as somebody who's been in the business for as long as I have, I've seen a lot of false finishes. I've counted a lot of false finishes. It's not too often that people can get me on false finishes. These guys got me twice where I thought this match was over. Hence the term false finish. I thought it was over. They had me hooked.
That's what got me into wrestling to begin with, was the quote-unquote false finish. It's that moment of, whatever emotion you have. It's that, it's coming, and then nothing happens.
It's that
or they
one,
kick out.
Two, oh, you know what I mean?
That's what gets me hooked.
It's about to be over.
When you don't know the end result, you think, oh, well, he hit this move here, or she did that move there. One, just like I said, one, two, and like 2 5/8 or 6/8 or 7/8 or whatever, they kick out, or they grab the rope, or the tap out doesn't come, whatever it may be. That's what got me into wrestling, and that's what the beauty of this match was. I don't like Roman Reigns. I've told you this a million times, but that match had me, and if it had you, it had me.
Well, all that went out the window, I got to tell you.
Well,
it all went out the window because the run-in for Sheamus and Cesaro, it was not needed here, and it ruined a perfectly good match, a match that everybody was into. Look, you can have the same result.
Yes.
But let's have one of the guys go over. Let's have a definitive winner and a definitive loser by a pinfall, and you can have the same result on the run-in afterwards. The screwjob finish was absolutely terrible. Listen, I get it. It falls into the narrative and it falls into the thought process of the Shield reunion. I get it. I understand it. But you can get the same result after the 1-2-3. There's no need to ruin a perfectly good match where both guys are getting over and they're working hard for each other and the crowd is finally behind Roman Reigns.
And then they ruin it. It's terrible.
It was awful.
I have a couple problems coming on here. And I hate the Shield reunion idea. I despise it.
No, I don't hate it too much.
I hate the fact of them reusing a gimmick over and over and over again like they did. And especially because this one's not going to be for good. This one's going to be a one-off. It's going to be the next pay-per-view. They're going to contrive a weird match with Sheamus and Cesaro and The Miz, who essentially weren't even part of this whole feud to begin with. It was the stupid Miztourage who are irrelevant. And now I get that, too. You can't have Bo Dallas and Axel. In a big match with Roman Reigns. I understand that. But now it's just some weird little, oh, let's put Sheamus and Cesaro. They have nothing better to do right now with The Miz versus The Shield, who are done. And now they're just kind of putting in Seth and Dean, too. It's a weird little combination. I hate reusing the gimmick, and I hate the way they're building the gimmick.
You might not be too wrong on the one-off. The thought process here, I think, is The Shield was one of the most dominant factions in recent WWE history.
Absolutely.
It was a group of guys that were over with the crowd. It's a nostalgia act, basically.
Sure.
They were over with the crowd.
But they do so much of that.
They were super, I mean, how do I want to say this? Let's just say they were super, super over. So when something like that hasn't been around for a certain period of time, look, it's going to move merchandise. The Shield are going to sell tickets.
But that's the problem. It's a money grab.
They're
it's not
sell
a long-term solution.
This is a business.
I know. I get it. But it's not what's best for fans. It might be what's best for a business, as they like to say. It's not what's best for fans. If you're going to bring this back, bring it back. I really enjoyed Roman Reigns as the quote-unquote muscle of the Shield. I liked that. When you're force-feeding him down my throat as the next guy, especially because you don't have the next guy. You ruined Finn Balor. You ruined Samoa Joe. And now part of it, he got hurt.
But it's not where all three guys are headed long term. And I think we all understand that.
Then that's why it's a waste to
me. I think we're all on the understanding of that. It's not a waste, more so as maybe hearing that music one more time.
So you're going to bring the music back one more time for a semi-irrelevant pay-per-view.
One more time.
Down through the crowd. It's going to be a one-off versus three weird combinations of guys.
Give the crowd something that they've wanted. Give them something to pop for, because quite honestly, there's not much for them to cheer for right now.
Unfortunately so.
So the Shield, yes, while it may be a quick fix, is that fix for right now. So we're certainly going to have to see what happens with the Shield. I wasn't a fan of the finish of Roman Reigns versus The Miz.
I'm never a fan of those type of matches, by the way. It ruined that match. You're right. It was a great match.
Oh, yeah.
And it ruined it because it was a way to fit this in.
Well, whatever happens with the Shield remains to be seen. But I got to touch on something real quick. You watch Monday Night Raw, obviously, this week, as you said.
Yep.
I watch Monday Night Raw as well, too. Did you see the WWE, the new 2K18 commercial?
Yes, I'm pretty excited for that game, by the way. I don't know, are you much of a gamer?
I'm not much of a gamer. Every now and again, what'll happen is I'll have, like, an urge to impulse buy.
Which is exactly what I do with WWE games and Madden, by the way, which is aside from that.
Yeah, and I'll go out and either buy, like, the last time I felt the urge to impulse buy, I went out and bought a whole game system and bought WWE, whatever it was, 2K16 or something. This was literally 2 years ago. Never once opened it. It's still sitting in the wrapper. But the 2K18 commercial was actually a really good commercial. Snoop Dogg singing the song and the whole thing. Did a really decent job on selling me the game, and I might actually buy it.
I'm leaning towards the purchase. Just similar to what you said, and this is nothing against the game itself, but I could use the same comment for Madden as well. What happens is I played for a day, I played for 2 days, I played for 3 days, and then I don't play it again. I have WWE 2K17. I even bought the fancy collector's pack because that's all they had left. So the $100 thing with the little figurine and whatever, it's literally still wrapped up the pack beside the game on the floor of my game room.
Yeah,
But that's what happens.
If I play any game, it's for a couple days or anything like that, and then it sits there. I use my Xbox for Netflix and WWE Network and everything.
But you're right, though. The commercial was fabulous.
They did a great job with the commercial. It did a great job of selling me the game. But you know what I noticed the most?
What's that?
Snoop Dogg was singing the song. Sasha Banks was in the commercial. But they didn't reference each other.
Thank the Lord.
Which was awesome. Because in my opinion, listen, I love Sasha Banks.
Sure.
She's a great talent. She's awesome. The boss character is fantastic. I like Snoop Dogg. But the whole Sasha Snoop Dogg thing, in my opinion, is so tired out. We get it. He's your cousin.
Yep.
I get it. I get the whole thing. I don't know why, out of everything in that commercial, that's what stuck out to me the most. But I was just like, it's kind of a breath of fresh air.
No, it really is. And I like the entrance at WrestleMania where he came out and rapped for her. That was pretty cool. And
Yeah, that was awesome.
I forget the female artist that was involved with that. But
I do too.
But it was an awesome entrance. It was so cool. But it was just tired. I like the family and the storylines that they have sometimes. But you're very right. It's very tired. I'm tired of hearing it. Listen, all due respect to the greats and the legends, I'm tired of hearing about the parents and the fathers and the third and the fourth generation stars. And that's great. You want to note it once? Sure. But I'm tired of hearing about it all the time. Like, oh, okay, we know Cowboy Bob Orton is Randy's dad. Like, we get it. We didn't need to see him on the side of the ring and getting beat up. Like, that's old. That's tired. That's ruthless aggression. That's attitude era WWE. That's past.
All right, don't get hot about it.
I'm so done.
Don't get hot.
I'm done.
If you're hot, say you're hot.
I am.
Something really cool happened on NXT this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't see it yet, but spoil for me.
I'm going to have to
spoil Hashtag spoiler alert. If you don't want to know, press the volume down just for a little bit right here.
Something really cool happened on NXT this week, and it's something that hasn't happened in the professional wrestling industry in about 20 years.
And what's that?
War Games is making a return.
Really?
To sports entertainment.
I'm thrilled.
William Regal announced on this week's episode of NXT that the War Games match would return at NXT TakeOver Houston, Saturday night, November 18th.
Now, to make sure that you all know what this is, clarify what the exact War Games match is for us.
So there, in this case, there's going to be three teams, I believe.
Okay.
Let me see it's going to be the Undisputed Era, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
Sanity, Eric Young, Alexander Wolf, and Killian Dane, and the Authors of Pain, along with Roderick Strong. Now, traditionally, the War Games is two rings, an enclosed cage, and in however many minute intervals, you know, at whoever's discretion, a person from a team enters the ring until everybody's involved.
In the ring.
Correct. Here's the thing. I can remember years ago, the Spirit Squad pitching Vince McMahon on this to work DX in War Games. And very understandably so, he shot it down because he didn't want to give up the extra seating that the ring was going to take up along with the cage, which was probably, you know, several, you know, in the thousands and thousands of dollars worth of ticket sales.
I'm absolutely.
Completely understand. I'm wondering what changed. I mean, obviously it's been 10 years or so, but like I'm wondering what changed.
Maybe it's the whole Starcade bring back. And this is where I'm okay with bringing back things. I know I might sound like a bit of a hypocrite now talking about the Shield and all that previously, but that's where I'm okay with bringing back things because it's things you haven't seen in literally 10, 15, 20 years. Maybe it's that whole just the mindset of let's bring back some things that were in the past. I like that idea. But my I have twofold concerns here. One, it has to be like the original match or close enough that it resembles it. And two, I remember in the past when WCW used to do it, the camera work being dreadful.
Yeah.
It's almost like the Punjabi prison match. How it's like, just camera-wise. Obviously, it's a terrible match too, we believe. But it would just you couldn't see anything. There was a pole or a stick or this and that in the way. Like, they should have had the cameraman inside the first level of that. And hopefully they'll have some cameraman inside the ring. And clearly they'll move around when needed, but there has to be a better camera work there.
Well, WWE has top-notch camera crew. Well, I mean,
I thought so, and then I saw a Punjabi prison match.
Well, you can only work with what you have. I mean, there's only...
Whoever
designed the Punjabi prison, that's their fault. That's not the fault of the camera guys.
But well, not the camera guys itself, but they could have done a better job with that.
Guys are my boys. Stu and Rico and all the boys over there, they're my guys. Don't talk on them.
It's fine.
Well, Triple H tweeted out, for the first time in nearly 20 years, hashtag NXT TakeOver War Games. Obviously, the War Games was a creation of Dusty Rhodes and a staple in the WCW and NWA's. I want to briefly mention real quick before we get to Jim Ross, Jeff Hardy had successful surgery on the rotator cuff. So he's expected to be out 9 months at the longest, is from what I understand, but that would put him out of action for WrestleMania this year.
Now, let me ask you this real quick, because obviously we wish Jeff well. Your guy, Matt Hardy's teasing a new gimmick change. Is he hashtag woke? Is that coming? His tweet was very similar to something like that. He did the Hardys over the years.
I don't know. I'm being very honest. I don't know. I haven't talked to him. I haven't talked to him in a couple weeks,
actually. I'm here for spoilers from you. You're his guy, and you got nothing for me.
I don't have a good answer for you on that, but what I do have, we have Jim Ross coming up next.
I am thrilled. Thrilled. Good old JR.
Good old JR. Jim Ross is stepping into Wrestler Court. Court is about to be in session as the Wrestler Court podcast with Keenan and Turtle rolls on. JR, coming right back.
Hey, this is the Innovator of Violence, Tommy Dreamer, and you're listening to the Wrestling Court podcast, taking your podcasting to the extreme.
All right, Turtle, slam the gavel down. Court is in session, and joining us right now is a legendary broadcaster from WWE Monday Night Raw. He is a WWE Hall of Famer and author of the new book, Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling. His name is Jim Ross, and he's on the line with us right now. How you doing, JR?
I'm doing good. Good. Thanks for having me on.
Congratulations on the new book. We appreciate you coming on and doing this with us.
Oh, you bet. You bet. I'm glad to do it. I'm always happy to talk about Slobberknocker.
Well, the book begins in Philadelphia at WrestleMania 15, you know, us being a Philadelphia-based podcast, at the then First Union Center, now known as the Wells Fargo Center. As someone who has been coming to Philadelphia the majority of your career, what are some of your favorite Philadelphia memories?
Well, the way our book starts and ends is in Philly, and it's then what we do in the middle is a unique story. But Philadelphia is loaded with a lot of memories. I really believe that Philadelphia was going to be the site of my last booking, and when I came back to do Austin and Rock One at WrestleMania there, I think it was 15, that I thought because of my second bout of Bell's palsy, and it was a pretty stiff affair, and the HDTV was coming into fashion, and you know, I never was a matinee idol, unlikely television guy for sure. So Philly's is a big place for a lot of reasons, but I really believe that was where I was going to do my last event, and thank God it wasn't. But Philadelphia is always a special place for that regard. I kind of relaunched my journey in Philadelphia, so it'll always be a special place for me in that regard.
Now, over the years, you've often referred to Vince McMahon as the chairman, which I always did enjoy personally. What was the reaction of Vince when you approached him to write the foreword for Slobberknocker?
Oh, he was very happy to do it. You know, I text him, and he, as he normally does, he texts me back in just a matter of minutes, and he was very. He said, "I'm honored you asked me." So it was good for all of us. You know, I think Vince is a very influential guy within the world of what we do, and more so than anybody else I've ever come across. So he was a perfect choice, I thought. and was very happy to do it. So all the guys, you know, Austin, Stone Cold's got an afterword. I got stuff from The Rock and Coach Bob Stoops and Mark Cuban, Billy Gibbons, a lot of guys, my buddies, a lot of friends of mine that are, you know, have name identity. And, you know, obviously the game, name of the game is to try to market the book. I thought this book would not even be finished writing. After my wife got killed in March, I was just about ready to throw it in, and because I'd already lost my first writing partner, Scott Williams, to unexpected death in August of last year. So then Jan dies in March of this year, and I'm trying to finish the book, and it just seemed to be a little bit insurmountable at some days. But I'm glad I rediscovered my testicular fortitude, as Mick Foley would say, and I finished the journey, and I'm very proud of what we produced, and I think for my late wife's sake and memory, I think it's a great, there's some great things in there about her and my life in general, but she was such a big part of my career and was a great, as I said before, coach's wife. She was really good at interacting with the talents, and inviting them into our home and cooking and doing laundry. Gosh almighty, she was just she went above and beyond the call and was invaluable to me in every aspect of my life. So the book was finished as it should have been. It's doing really good now. It's available to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, but Amazon's been doing a great job getting the stuff there. They have inventory, and apparently some of the Barnes & Noble stores have had a hard time keeping inventory.
You have an entire chapter in this book dedicated to Paul Heyman. Where did the relationship start, and are you still friendly with him today?
Well, it started when I met him in WCW back in the 80s, late 80s. And I saw riding with him and Eddie Gilbert on to some towns for television tapings in WCW. I saw discovered a very intelligent, observant student of the game. And he intrigued me with his personality and his enthusiasm. But he didn't fare so well with some of the other decision makers there. And sometimes Paul would fall afoul of the political process in power. So I had been using different guys as my partner on TV, and knowing that I thought he was a hell of a talker, and he was coachable. He wanted to learn. I told the booking committee that I was going to use him as my partner, and they were so relieved and happy. There was no pushback because nobody wanted to work with him. So me taking him off his hand, off their hands was a godsend to them. So that's kind of how that started. There's stuff in the book, a lot of stuff in the book about Paul, as you mentioned. I just think, you know, he's immensely talented, and why wouldn't I want to work with him? We sounded different. We had different edges, and I thought we blended well. And I just always believed in his skills. And yes, we're still friends today. Paul was my special guest at a Ringside with Jim Ross show in New York City during SummerSlam weekend, and was gracious enough to lend me his time, and he was just phenomenal. So yeah, we're still friends this day, and we're always going to be friends. You know, the dynamic that we had on the air was extremely rare, is extremely unique, and I think so many people believed, even people that know, that understand the business, really believe that we hated each other then and we hate each other now, and it's just, I'm really amused by that. But Paul's still a great friend, immense talent, best talker in the business, and I'm just really happy that our paths crossed and we were able to work together as successfully as we did.
I want to briefly jump into some New Japan here, JR. Let's go back to Wrestle Kingdom 11, Kenny Omega versus Okada Turtle. They went 59 minutes in the Tokyo Dome. Now, everywhere you turn, someone was saying it was the greatest match that they've ever seen, while some of the wrestling purists, they kind of called it overrated. Jim, what did you think of Omega Okada 59 minutes, the first match?
I called it on Access TV. It was good. It was excellent. Now, you know, I don't know how everybody, I'm not as smart as you guys. I'm not as smart as the younger generation. I'm not able to break down every match I've ever seen and put them in some sort of numerical order. I can fall in love with a match after seeing it the first few hours. After seeing it, I can still be enamored with it. But all three of the Omega Okada matches that I called with Josh Barnett this year, I've enjoyed immensely. But I also enjoy going back to 89, the three Flair and Steamboat matches I call with three different partners. That was also a cool trilogy. So there's Rock and Austin, three main events at WrestleMania, 15, 17, 19, all very special. So it was a very special match, but I don't have either the skill set or the inclination to want to go back in my history and say, oh, that was without a doubt the best match I ever saw, because I've seen a lot of really great matches. And I say that out of great respect and admiration. But Omega and Okada had three classics, no doubt. But were they the greatest matches of that somebody ever saw? If you felt that way, then it was. It's an individual thing, and it's very, very subjective.
Of course, we're talking to Jim Ross, author of the new book, Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling, available right now on Amazon.com and wherever books are sold. JR, over the years, someone you've seen a lot of is Cody Rhodes, and he's someone that I've personally spent a lot of time with over the years, and I find his story fascinating. As someone who was in an executive position at one point and someone who knows talent very well, do you feel someone like Cody needed to go away from the WWE system and become the star that he knew that he could be before working his way back? And are there others in the WWE that could learn from his outside WWE success?
I think that if it's the right thing to do at the end of the day, if departing WWE in Cody Rhodes' case is what it comes to, and then subsequently that separation results in positive actions. In other words, he's stayed booked. He's had some quality matches. He's gotten better as an entrepreneur, as a self-promoter, as a booker, as a worker. Then, yes, it was the right thing to do. It looks as if that's how it's playing out for Cody, because he's maturing in every area, and because these guys that are on the quote-unquote indie circuit, and whatever your definition of that is what it is, but the guys that are non-WWE guys, they're very they have to be very entrepreneurial in spirit. And I think that's a really good thing. The Young Bucks have done a real good job with that. Kenny Omega, as we mentioned earlier, with Okada, has done a great job of marketing himself with merchandise and so forth. So Cody is right there with those guys, and I think it apparently is the right thing to do. It's an individual thing. I couldn't say, well, here, this group of guys would be better off leaving. They may be, but it's an individual thing. And I felt like Cody probably was just getting very, very frustrated and had reached the point to where he must do something, and he did. So I don't know where the other guys feel about their progression. I know a lot of times the talents themselves, in many cases around in the business in general, won't take responsibility for their lack of success to the fullest extent. It's always the office or they didn't give me my push, or they helped me back, or they put a glass ceiling over my head. So whatever. So they are bad people, apparently. But I always believe that in this world where there's not an overabundance of highly skilled main event level talent, that if you consistently do great work, you overachieve on a regular basis, you regularly have the best match on the card on a house show or a TV show, then it's inevitable that you will eventually be quote-unquote discovered. The issue there is, with my theory, is that most younger talents in their 20s and early 30s don't have the patience to go through that process. They want it today or yesterday. And it's just sometimes it's just not there for that to happen. So I always keep an anxious eye with those guys that are out there on the road doing their indie thing. But Cody's doing fine, and I hope he's saving his money. I hope he's paying his taxes and doing all the things that an independent contractor entrepreneur must do to stay ahead of the Uncle Sam and fulfill his obligations there. And I'm sure that at some point, at least I'd say I'm sure, I'm relatively certain at some point that he will reunite with WWE when it's the best thing for all involved to do.
You're easily one of the best to broadcast anything in sports, sports entertainment, in any walk of life. What drew you to the world of sports entertainment over like an ESPN or a CBS or some more mainstream outlets?
Well, you got to understand, mathematically speaking, when I was getting my game together as a young lad, there wasn't no ESPN. There wasn't cable. There wasn't the internet. I took a whole different route. That's why my book is different, I think, to get to where I am or where I have been. You know, I'm lucky to be in three halls of fame. I'm lucky to have a 40-plus year career in the wrestling business. Guys like me aren't supposed to be hired in the wrestling business in a territory era. I wasn't a shooter. I wasn't a great athlete. I wasn't a worker. I wasn't going to be a worker. Didn't want to be a worker. Didn't want to be a wrestler. I wanted to be in broadcasting. But I was fascinated by the overall process of pro wrestling. So I got a job from the booker, Bill Watts, who I think was a kind of an inside rib to Leroy McGurk, that he got Leroy a babysitter and a driver and somebody to buy his whiskey and all the, and his cigars and things. And that was me. So that job probably should have lasted about a summer. But it lasted, you know, my love affair and getting a check out of wrestling has lasted over 40 years. So I obviously made the right decision. But it really wasn't easy to stay hooked and to stay in the business. If ignorance is bliss sometimes, guys. If I had known how unwelcome I was and unlikely it was for me to succeed, being a completely neophyte, I didn't have any friends in the business. I didn't go through a school. I didn't know anybody. I met Bill Watts through promoting two live events at my college for our fraternity. To raise funds for a nonprofit entity, and that's how I got in. And it was a temporary deal. It wasn't a hire. It wasn't a big time hire. I was making $1.25 a week. How valuable was I? You know, not a lot, but it was a really unique journey for me. And I have no regrets. There are things that happened that are hard to live through, but I have, and it's made me a better guy, I think.
Do you have any advice for the young kids out there that are looking to break into whether it's the wrestling world or the broadcasting world?
Well, you know, they both have some of the same characteristics in as much as, you know, I think I'm a big proponent of education. My first boss, Leroy McGurk, was a graduate of Oklahoma State, was an editor of the school paper, sports editor of the newspaper there. He was an academician. And he was really a brilliant guy in that regard, and he was a shooter and all that good stuff. But you know, he was quite the character beginning in the 30s, and then finally losing the sight and the only eye he had that was viable was in 1951. So his career was cut short. Brilliant guy though. So I'm a big proponent of education. So with that said, I believe that to get in the wrestling business and to be an entrepreneur, to be a independent contractor, for your own peace of mind, you need to have Plan B somewhere within your reach. You need to have prepared for Plan B. You need an education, a college degree, a skill set in something else, whether it's welding or carpentry or plumbing or something. You never want to leave yourself with having to have only one card to draw to, and that's getting over. And if I don't get over it, my professional life basically is done, because that's a helplessness that no one needs to perpetuate. So I believe in having Plan B. I believe in, if you're a broadcaster, you've got to create a body of work. You've got to document on a reel your body of work in a succinct attention deficit disorder fashion. But it's practical experience and being dedicated to what you want to do. I mean, you know, I didn't make any money for years. I was 19 years. It took me 19 years in the business to do my first WrestleMania. So this ain't no overnight sensation. Oh, boy, this is a little easy street. But once I got there, it was great. And it's still great. And I'm very blessed I have had this run. But, you know, it's just preparation. Plan B is a big thing. Education is a big thing. Having the patience to set a plan in motion and work your plan. But there's a lot of goal setting. But boy, it's not easy. This in the world of wrestling, as lucrative as it is, if you can find your way into it, it's challenging to get there. And there's got to be a plan. So right now, if I'm a young guy and I want to wrestle, a young woman, and I want to get in the ring, I got to figure out some way to get to that performance center in Orlando. End of story. Whether one way or the other, either coming in or moving through. But I got to get to Orlando in some shape, form, or fashion. And if that means I got to go to Ring of Honor first, or I got to go to Impact Wrestling first, or Lucha Underground, or wherever it may be, that's what I'll do. But at some point, if you want to live your dream and get to the promised land, in my opinion, you've got to find your way to Orlando and become a star in the workouts and in the classroom at the Performance Center.
You made mention of Cowboy Bill Watts, JR, a couple minutes ago, and you've often through the years made mention of him as your mentor. What are some things that the Cowboy taught you that you've carried all the way through your career to the present day?
Oh, a ton of things. But just fundamental stuff. Bill was very organized, very systematic. He had a structure within the wrestling business that was, I suggest, maybe unparalleled. He was ahead of his time in time management and things of that nature. But Bill did little things. You know, he had a system, as I said. If he got a bill in, if they got a bill, he liked for those bills to be paid the day that they were received. Pet peeve, I guess. But I'm that way today. If I get my phone bill, I'll break my ass to get it paid today, as if they're going to take my phone tomorrow. I don't know why it's that way. It's just that stuff I learned from Bill. I learned from Bill and from Vince. You know, you don't ever compromise or take shortcuts with Uncle Sam. You always take care of your responsibilities as a taxpayer, on time, in full amounts, and with no questions asked. So I've kind of followed that deal, too. But time management's a big deal. Watts was a guy that, and I'm bad about this, you know, he would tell you, God dang it, man, you got to tell me what time it is, not how to make the watch. So they were succinct, and so time management, honesty, sticking to your principles, and not compromising philosophy, and to acquiesce to the ego of a talent. Sometimes you have to, you certainly can compromise. I'm not saying that, but you can't throw away your values of your game. It's like saying, well, let's have a card. We don't have to have any finishes. We'll do DQs and count outs and referee stoppages and things like that, but we won't do any finishes. Well, you can't do that. That's not what people pay to see. And but Watts is always very good about putting the audience first. I think that was something I've learned. And respecting the business, I certainly learned that from Bill. And, you know, little nuances that he taught me, you know, if little things that were simply words, different words, like saying, if a babyface takes a walk out of the ring, he's regrouping. He's reevaluating his strategy. And you can bet when he comes back, you know, he's going to be a different cat. So you protect the babyface for walking away from the fight. A heel does the same thing. Oh, look at Mr. Tough Guy. It's too hot for him in the kitchen. You know, that kind of thing. So there's two different stories to be told for the same actions. And Watts is a master of teaching me all those things. So take care of your hero and to vilify the antagonist. And he was really good at that stuff. So Bill's booking was basically based around human nature and human elements, because we all can share those traits. And but he was really good. He was taskmaster, a little Vince Lombardi-like, I'm guessing. Tough, hard-ass, you know, fine guys. He fined Dick Murdoch everything he made one check but a dollar. So Murdoch got fined every town for being late, for horsing around or whatever. So I think Dickie was going to have like a $5,000 or $6,000 a week. He ended up with a $1 week.
Last one from me, JR, and you just spoke about football a little bit. I have to ask you about your beloved Oklahoma Sooners, and one of your Sooners plays for our Eagles. We're a Philadelphia-based podcast here, and Lane Johnson, a former Sooner, plays for the Eagles now. Do you get to follow much of his career?
Oh, yeah. Lane's a friend of mine. Lane's a good Twitter follower, and former quarterback in high school and junior college, believe it or not. He came to Oklahoma and kept growing. He came in and they thought, well, he'll be a tight end because he's not going to play quarterback for us. And he could throw the ball like 80 yards, but, you know, he's 6'7", so he was just kind of gangly for the QB. And then he started growing and eating, so they moved him to defensive end or to end, and he outgrew that, and he moved him to defensive tackle, and he outgrew that. So finally I said, my God, he's going to be a monster. He was 6'7", 300 and something. And they moved him to offensive line with his athletic ability from being a former back. He was just phenomenal.
And now he's one of the most quality right tackles in the league, and I'm so glad he plays for us here with the Eagles.
Yeah, he's a player and a good guy, and I'm proud of him. He's a good center. So he's a good one for you guys. So he should be a stalwart, a linchpin on that Eagle team for years to come.
All right, JR, last question. When everything is said and done, and when Jim Ross goes home, and as your friend Steve Austin says, you ride off into the sunset, how does Jim Ross want to be remembered?
Well, as a wrestling fan that got to live his dream and never retired, I will never die of rust, fellas. Well, JR's time comes because he's going to die of use. So, but a wrestling fan that lived his dream and lived it till the very last day.
Well, Jim, for my money, you are one of the best to ever do it. The book is called Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling. We wish you nothing but the best in the future, and I hope to see you soon.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
The great Jim Ross. Our thanks to Jim Ross for a fantastic interview, a great story. Again, the book is Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling, available on Amazon.com and wherever books are sold. Hey, do us a favor. Follow us on social media, at Real Kev Keenan, at Eric S. Golden, and of course, the show account, at Wrestler Court, all on Twitter. Court is adjourned. We will see you next week. This has been Wrestler Court with Keenan and Turtle, powered by Sports Radio 94, WIP.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.